afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, August 13th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Melody. I'd love to say happy Monday. However...
Yes.
Well, that's your job.
Oh.
Sorry.
Well, you know, we had a, it was a tough day in the gold and silver markets today, of course. I'm sure everyone is well aware. And the complete sector was hit very hard. And, of course, main reason we had a big... And it wasn't that big of an increase in the dollar today. It is up over 96.39 on the U.S. dollar, up 0.06. Foreign markets got hit overnight. This is all in relationship to the Turkey situation. And again, no one is really sure what the contagion is going to be, or I should say how well the central banks will be able to create more debt to keep it from, filtering through to these other economies around the world. But so the whole sector got hit today. But of course, gold was actually hit the least. I mean, it was down almost 1.5%, down $17.90 in the aftermarket, New York spot price aftermarket at $11.94.30. I think futures contracts show a little bit better price, still holding at that 1,201 number. I'm not quite sure what month that is, Dave, but a little bit stronger number in the COMEX pricing.
Yeah, and that might be December.
December contract. So, a little bit of a positive outbreak there. And again, I want to encourage those who did purchase last week. I mean, your orders are still good. You buy gold and silver for a reason. And I think this is going to be a one-day wonder. I think we're going to turn around and I know I've been told don't predict, Melody, and I've always tried not to predict because we just don't know what these markets can do, and particularly when they're manipulated so. But usually when you have this kind of a day, there is something going on behind the scenes, and we'll have to see if we can find out what that might be. But guarantee you somebody big somewhere dumped something. And we know, Turkey is after gold because they're telling their citizens to trade in their gold. You have Iran that now has sanctions on their precious metals, from the United States. They're not allowed to purchase any. So, there's something definitely is, and I don't know if this is where it's breaking loose or what, but I do believe this is going to be a one-day wonder. Is it going to come back $20 tomorrow? I think it'll be back over $1,200. I don't know if it's going to be back the $18. That we see to the negative today, but I'll guarantee it's going to be back over 1,200 tomorrow. Silver varies. Go ahead.
Melody, just before you continue, it's I have another possible reason. I mean, it's no wonder that gold is where it is these days. Despite the profound number of economic and geopolitical events that should have gold at at least $5,000 an ounce or higher. But what I'm talking about is the CFTC, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, which reported recently that gold speculators added over 22,000 contracts to their net short position in the week ending August 7th. And that brings total short contracts to over 63,000. That's the largest since records became publicly available in 2006. The blatant gambling on gold and other commodities, nothing more than legal market manipulation. And it shouldn't be allowed, in my opinion. The vast majority of investors don't have the type of expertise or the technology that provides immediate access to information that these speculators use to engage in options trading. The new Congress should work on ending this horrible practice when it convenes next year.
They really should. And that's how they control, and that's how they manipulate. And we're still positive because the fundamentals, Dave, are still strong for these markets. I'm sorry, but everyone in this industry across this country, huge, my huge buyers. They're global. They're around the world. They have offices. And so my point is, by all means, gold really should be trading at $5,000 or more. Hey, we'll even cut that in half, $2,500. I mean, these numbers should be much higher, but we have to be patient. And what a wonderful time for you to be able to accumulate and add to your holdings. It's a great time. And there's more upside potential to these numbers than anything to the downside. Platinum was hit today, 3.15%, down $26 at $805. Palladium was down a little over 2%. Down $19 at $895. And again, you have those big hits on those white metals. Silver down 2, platinum down 3, palladium down 2%, and naturally gold followed along. So we're not quite sure which was the metal that, certainly platinum got hit big. Oil today, down 29 cents at $67.34. The dollar was trading up 0.06 at 96.39. And these are the ones that should have gotten hit today. The Dow posted a four-day losing streak. It's only down 119 points. I mean, that's peanuts. And that should have been down 800 points. 800 points. Not 100. It was down 119, not even a half a percent, at 25,193. The S&P was down 11 points at 2,821. The NASDAQ was down 19 points at 7,819. And the VIX was up 12% today. So, you know, it's... and that's why I believe we're going to see a reversal. But if I remember, Dave, the last time we saw that huge move in the VIX, I think there was pressure on gold at the time because knee-jerk reactions will go to treasuries.
Well, that's what's happening again this time.
Yep, absolutely. And so you see that knee-jerk reaction. People go into treasuries, which makes the dollar stronger, and it'll push on gold eventually because it's a quick. They can move billions and billions of dollars just by a few keystrokes. A little more difficult with gold, but eventually gold catches up. And that's what we have to remember. There is one place I wanted to do. I wanted to see what these European and Asian markets did overnight. Let's see if I can bring it up here. Bear with me here, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, I got a new update on the market. It fell a couple more points, 125 on the Dow. Japan was down almost 2%. Hong Kong was down 1.5%. You know, Germany was pretty much the same as ours, just a little over 0.5%. That greed index, the fear and greed index, is beginning to move a little bit lower. That was at 56. And even Bitcoin was down a little over 2%. So actually, in all these metals and Bitcoin, gold fared the best today. Being down just a little over 1.5%, Dave. So, and I think, you know, we're seeing this again, this global fallout from the Turkey jitters. We have the financial crisis that is brewing, a possible impact, not just here in the States, but across the globe. European markets, they've kind of failed to shrug off the jitters today. Turkey's worsening economic crisis has prompted investors to offload the riskier equities and flee to safe haven assets. The European stocks 600 finished the session down 0.25% provisionally off its season's low. And I did talk about already Germany and European markets. So they just all closed just a touch below the flat line.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, you know, trade today, sectors were mixed by the close, with technology and chemicals holding steady across the globe. Healthcare failed to close higher, with that sector being hit by that crazy Roundup cancer ruling. Where on Friday, last Friday, a U.S. Court judge ruled that Roundup, the weed killer, had caused cancer in a groundskeeper and awarded him a whopping $298 million in debt.
Good.
Yep. Yep.
Absolutely.
Yay. The maker of Roundup, which is the U.S. seed and chemical group Monsanto, was deemed to have failed to warn the groundskeeper of the cancer risks posed by its weed killer. Monsanto, which was recently bought by Germany's Bayer, and consequently, Bayer's shares tanked during the morning session and I think closed down over 10%. Definitely the market focus today tuned into Turkey and their financial woes.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to, we should talk a little bit more about Turkey and about, the heart of the concern is their falling currency. It's down now 82% against the dollar year to date. And this the lending spree has created two potential problems. One is that the Turkish banks look to foreign wholesale markets as a way to fund their credit boom instead of relying on more steady domestic deposits. Now the expense of servicing those loans has jumped with the lira's decline, and it's going to be much more difficult for banks to roll over. The second risk is the possible sharp rise in the non-performing loans, including those made in foreign currencies, mostly to businesses. And William Jackson, he's the chief marketing economist at Capital Economics, he says the risk is, he thinks that the risk is more you get a rise in bad debts, and he says it could be a quite severe credit crunch. And so we'll have to see and follow this as this unfolds. We know President Trump cracked down further on Turkey by doubling tariffs on steel and aluminum. The lira was off about 8% today and has lost more than 35% against the dollar just in the past week. And I believe when I said earlier the 82%, that was year to date. So I don't know where this is going, Dave, and how we're going to see this as, there's talks of they're already trying to talk about this isn't the necessarily the systemic risk of the Asian crisis of 98 and 99. And I'd beg to differ with that one.
There's something key here that I'm sure is on the top of the minds of U.S. Military leaders, and that's Turkey is home to an air base, a critical strategic air base that's used by the U.S. In the Middle East, and Turkey's been a NATO member since the 1950s. And it hosts a critical part of the Western Alliance's missile defense system against Iran. A spokesperson for Turkish President Erdogan said on Saturday, the U.S. runs the risk of losing Turkey as a whole. The entire Turkish public is against U.S. policies that disregard Turkey's legitimate security demands. I can't imagine on the one hand that Turkey is going to put itself in the position of losing that kind of strategic support. On the other hand, we know that Erdogan is talking more with Putin, and who knows how alliances can be realigned, as a result of crises and the lack of effective diplomacy during times like these.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be following this story close, and certainly an impact on gold today. And I didn't give the 10-year yield today. Let me see if I can find that and see. I think it dropped considerably. Let me see what it is here, ladies and gentlemen. Bear with me. 10-year yield, 2.88%. So, it's not that, but it wasn't that long ago. We were at 3.
Yeah, breached the 3% margin a little over a week ago.
Yeah. So that is a big drop. And, of course, that shows us just the amount of volume that is going into the treasuries. Retail sales, let's switch the story a little bit. Retail sales in 2018 are now forecast to climb higher than what had been expected. Of course, thanks to the U.S. tax reform and other upbeat economic indicators. Yay! Spending at retailers, excluding automobiles, and it's all done by debt. But on the other hand, it's good for us. So go out there and spend your credit cards, ladies and gentlemen, because that's always just better for those who are holding gold in the near future. So spending at retailers, excluding automobiles, gasoline stations, and restaurants, is predicted to climb at least 4.5%. The National Retail Federation said today that's compared with a prior forecast range of 3.8 to 4.4%. But the reasons? This is what we question. Higher wages. Well, we were already told that the wages aren't being hiked. We talked about this on Friday. Gains in disposable income. If you don't have higher wages, you're not going to have gains. You're not going to have disposable income because everything else is getting more expensive. A strong job market. If you work two jobs at part-time, and record high household net worth. Well, that's because homes are setting these obscene values. I mean, they're set at these higher and higher values, and that's what they're using the reasons to show that you know, the retail sales are forecasted to be stronger. But I don't know, Dave.
It seems like almost an act of desperation. I mean, I can't recall the countless numbers of times that you and I have read, have talked about the number of retail stores closing across the country, the thousands and upon thousands of jobs that have been and are continuing to be eliminated as we speak. I suspect that this is the organization's attempt on behalf of its stakeholders, you know, to paint as positive a picture on, you know, on the industry as it can. Because again, it's, you know, so much of this is about expectations, especially consumer-driven things. So, you know, I'm not surprised, although, you know, I mean, some of their statements are just false, as you pointed out. Yeah, and there's still the uncertainty around a trade war with China and how that's going to impact this sector in particular, particularly if the additional $200 billion of U.S. tariffs on goods from China kicks in. You know, and that's supposed to be finalized next month.
Well, what is finalized is this first segment of the program today, and I hear us going into a break. I hear the music, and ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. Please stay tuned, and we'll be right back right after these few short messages.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And our newsletter, which usually goes out maybe around this time every Monday, will be a little delayed. Had a little major lightning storm and kind of blew out all the computer routers and everything else. And so it's amazing that it was just fixed right prior to the program today. So we're running a little behind in getting that out to you. So it might maybe later today, maybe tomorrow morning. So, but yeah, it's amazing. That was the light show I saw last night was just incredible. And as beautiful as it might be, it's also very dangerous, and particularly when it hits your equipment. And so 1-800-375-4188, but you can still visit our website and sign up for the newsletter, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. As my grandmother used to say, if we didn't have any bad luck, we wouldn't have any luck at all.
Was she Irish?
My grandfather was part Irish. She was German.
The German married to an Irishman, that could explain it as well.
Yes, could be. We're just going to finish up a little bit on the retail. And this week, I believe we have, Dave, we have Home Depot, we have Walmart, Macy's. They're looking to report their quarterly earnings this week. I heard that Macy's, I've read where Macy's is doing a little bit better. Of course, they've closed how many stores over the past year or two. So eventually, you'd think that they'd have a sooner or later a better earnings for a quarter, but we'll see. We also are going to hear reports from Michael Kors, Louis Vuitton, and of course everyone is anticipating better than Wall Street. But you know, all that is just so funny and always amazes me. You know, these are your projections and they always come always right at or above, you know, where they're supposed to be. But so that's about it. So we'll see how this, how the retail sales plays out.
Sounds good, Melody. You know, on more of the financial end signals, some signals are flashing red in the structured credit market. There's that term again. It's according to Bank of America. Credit analysts there are warning that structured credit products, these derivative products that you know, were the cause of the 2008 financial crisis and subsequent recession, are entering what's called a new risk-off phase, as a number of market indicators imply caution is warranted. You know, the analyst at the bank said, "We turn more defensive on securitized products and underweight on agency mortgage-backed securities. Risk-off phase likely has started," they say. You know, the lowering appetite for risk among investors should spill into wider investment-grade corporate spreads, they say. And that will likely bleed into higher-rated structured products such as mortgage-backed securities from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The bank remains neutral across the rest of the sector, Melody.
You know, they're all, you know, all these analysts from the B of A and so forth. I mean, it's, you know, we look at these indicators, but when we see everything that's so manipulated and all the reports are all wrong, it's like, you know, how can we, you know, we still have to kind of look at these indicators and the trends and the 10-year treasury yields, the spread between the 2-year and 10-year treasuries, the rate volatility, investment grade corporate spreads. You know, these are all kind should give us some sort of an idea of where everything is headed. And there's analysts who says that the US stocks appear to have peaked compared with the Shanghai Composite Index. The reversion shows this may be the start of underperformance of the American equities versus the Chinese counterparts. And all of these appear likely to have turned in recent weeks. And maybe they're posed to extend moves in the most recent direction. And so August should provide us, you know, an idea of where the rest of the year heads.
That's true. And yeah, on a related note, experts are warning in general that several other signs in the stock market are now flashing red. Top professionals in the financial industry, no less, are sounding the alarm about a coming stock market crash. And there certainly have been rumblings throughout the first 8 months of 2018. Not long ago, we had a 3-day stretch. It was called the tech bloodbath. And during that time, Facebook had the worst day for a single company in stock market history. But we haven't seen the real big crash just yet, although many have been waiting for it to happen for a couple of years. And some people out there are convinced that it just may never come at all. Go fancy that. And of course, the truth is that, you know, we're in probably the most... the largest stock market bubble that, you know, we've ever seen here in the United States. And all other large stock bubbles have always ended with a major price collapse. So, you know, whether it happens immediately, soon, or, you know, if it takes a little longer, it's inevitable that stock prices will eventually return to their long-term averages.
Well, you know, Doug Ramsey, he's a chief investment officer for Luthold Group. He says he's out there sounding the alarm, and he says, unlike price-to-earning ratios, price-to-sales ratios are very hard to manipulate. And he's pointed out that the price-to-sales ratios are higher than we've ever witnessed before. He says, when you look at the median stock price-to-sales ratio, it is the highest that it has ever been, and it is twice as high as it was in February 2000. So he shared this chart, which, you know, he actually claims is unfit for family, for family-friendly publication. And he shows how in terms of median price-to-sales ratio, the S&P is twice as expensive as it was in 2000. He says the overvaluation in 2000 was highly concentrated. Today it is pervasive with a median S&P 500 price-sales ratio 2.63 times, more than the double, the 1.23 times prevailing in February 2000. And, you know, it's probably people saying, well, what are all those numbers? And what is the term a median price-to-sales ratio? And why the important part of this, I believe, is that we're seeing another sign of looking at these markets and looking at how these stock prices are priced. And it gives us to the overvaluations, how far over we are compared to another time when the markets corrected. And so again, Dave, it's just another sign that says we repeated. And we're at the same places where we were at in 2000 and 2008 in many different areas of the stock market. So,
well, you're so right. I mean, numbers count, and trends especially are real important. You know, and the number that you just mentioned, the fact that the price to sales ratio is, you know, more than double what it was 18 years ago is, I mean, to us it's stunning, and it shows we have a long, long way to fall. You know, as you said before, Melody, stock prices need to fall by almost or over 50% just to get into a neighborhood where they're going to make sense again. And something else that has been pointed out by one of the analysts is that in 2018, stocks are behaving very much like they did just before the dot-com bubble crashed, beginning of this century. You know, and another major indicator that's flashing red is correlation. I mean, just prior to the last two stock market crashes, stock prices began to wildly diverge. You know, while some stocks were still going up, others were cratering big time. And this lack of uniformity is often a big sign that trouble, big trouble, is on the way. You know, in January 2001, for example, before tech went bust, stocks diverged as growth flourished, similar to today. Everything named dot-com boomed, but old-line industries puttered. Well, there hasn't been such a divergence between stocks and the overall market since then, not even during the Great Recession.
Well, you know, and it's happening right now. There is a warning that correlation is at one of the lowest levels in the post-war era. Correlation is at one of the lowest levels in the post-war era. The combination is damaging. We now have record low correlation. At the same time, we have high valuations. Those two is a bad combo. It's a bad combination for the market. And when you have this situation of a lowest quintile correlation against the highest quintile valuation, this is amazing. Since 1952, you have a 10% declines on average. So when the stock market finally crashes, a lot of people were going to complain that nobody warned them in advance that it was coming. But in reality, anybody who cannot see it from a mile away, you got to be blind. So, Dave, there is no question that it's coming. The only question is how soon it's going to get here. And it certainly doesn't help that a trade war has erupted, which is also greatly disrupting global commerce.
Well, you know, you're right. I mean, take an honest look at the numbers. There's no debate that we're in far worse shape than we were just before the financial crisis of 2008. I mean, our debt levels alone are much higher. Stock prices way more inflated. Financial institutions are beginning to get as reckless, if not more so, especially based on what happened 10 years ago. None, or at least very few, of the long-term problems that plagued us back in 2008 have been fixed. I mean, just ponder that for a second, you know? Instead, the current system was, you know, patched up and, you know, all the bubbles were, you know, reinflated. Unfortunately, our attention spans are so short these days, you know, most people think 2008 is, you know, ancient history. But again, as we've been warning, we believe without a doubt that a much worse crisis than 2008 is on the way. And most people, not all, not many of our listeners who've become protected, but most people are going to be absolutely blindsided by it.
Absolutely. And there's no way, there's not enough money in this world that we can buy ourselves out of our problem. I don't know how much retail that we would have to do in order to buy us out of. We don't make enough money in this country to buy our way out of our debt problem. We can't grow our way out of our problem.
I wonder, you know, it just occurred to me, as high as our personal debt level is in this country, you know, in our households, our consumer debt, I wonder how much available credit, you know, in the aggregate is still available. How much more debt, personal debt, could we Americans go into, you know, if, you know, we were left to our own devices? That's a scary thought.
I wonder if there's got to be some way that we could figure that out, or at least guess. We could guesstimate. But something to ponder and something to figure out what that equation would be, because it would be interesting to see how much more debt, and then how much more debt would we have to go into in order to consume our way out of our problem.
Oh, my word. Oh,
so, yeah, it's today in July, the federal government collected a record of $1.4 trillion. I'm not going to round it out. I'm just rounding it out. In individual income taxes through the first 10 months of fiscal 2018. That's according to the monthly Treasury statement. But the federal government also ran a deficit for those 10 months, collecting record taxes, and we are still running almost a $1 trillion deficit for those 10 months. Mm. I mean, how can anyone truly believe? And I get the optimism. I get the optimism. We want those tax cuts to work. We want the jobs. We want the trickle down. We want to be hopeful. You know, that we can, you know, sustain our lifestyles, our standard of living and everything, and, you know, and everything is just going to go as is. But ladies and gentlemen, it's not. I mean, individual income taxes for the first 10 months, $1.4 trillion, and we're still running a $683 billion deficit for those 10 months. To me, those numbers are boggling. And I don't see it getting any better. Despite the record amount of individual income taxes collected in the first 10 months of this fiscal year, overall federal tax collections declined in the first 10 months of this fiscal year compared to last year. In the October through July period of fiscal 2017, the Treasury collected 2.8 in total taxes. In the October through July period of this fiscal year, the Treasury collected 2.7. So, I mean, Dave, it just tells us it's kind of like, you know, you're going and going and going, but you're not getting ahead in any way. And it's the same with the federal government. And, you know, I'd like to think that maybe on Wednesday we might be able to talk about the remember I discussed with you earlier today a constitutional convention?
Yes. Yeah, Tom Coburn, former senator from, I believe, Texas, I want to say, has been calling for a constitutional convention, one that's never been held since the founding of our country. Most states, if not all, have held at least one or more. But for the past couple of years, and way under the radar, states have been quietly putting together votes to do just that, call for a constitutional convention. We'll bring you more on Wednesday.
And we'll bring you more in the last segment of the program today. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. Tell me again tonight.
Each and every food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. You know, we're talking about debt, government debt. We're going to talk a little bit about student debt. You all know that, the amount of the trillions of dollars, the $1.5 trillion in student debt, and you have more than 1 million student loan borrowers each year that go into default. The outstanding education debt in the U.S. has tripled over the last decade. $1.5 trillion. That's bigger and probably posing a greater burden to Americans than auto or credit card debt. For many, the payments are proving unmanageable. And there's predictions by 2023 that nearly 40% of borrowers are expected to default on their student loans. Well, you know what's going to happen, Dave. What'll happen is if there's some sort of a financial collapse, they'll just walk away from those debts. They will all default on them. If you see, problems in another sector, you kind of get the idea. Well, if it's, maybe I can walk away from my debt. But what this is when a person has not made a payment toward their education debt in roughly a year, then it is sent to a third-party collection agency. So with what kind of student loan borrowers are at risk of defaulting and what's the financial impact of them doing so? There's a new report from the Urban Institute, a progressive think tank in Washington, that answers some of these questions. And so these researchers analyzed the fates of these borrowers who entered repayment in 2012.
Yeah, so who's defaulting on their student loans, Melody? Federal loans come with a lot of protections that should make default rare. Kristen Blagg, who's a research associate at the Urban Institute, learned that, that's not necessarily the case, however. Within 4 years after leaving school, nearly a quarter of borrowers had defaulted. Nearly a quarter. Wow.
Oh, that is a lot.
She said she found that these are borrowers who tend to be in overall financial distress. Defaulters are less likely than non-defaulters, for example, to have types of debt that require a risk assessment, like credit card, auto, and mortgage debt. They're more likely than non-defaulters to have their utility and medical bills fall into collections as well.
They also said that these additional debt pressures can explain, at least in part, why some borrowers might be putting off their student loan payments. So the issue of default appears to be more concentrated in neighborhoods of color. People who default on their student loans are more likely to live in Hispanic and Black neighborhoods, they found out. There's been previous research has shown that people of color are more burdened by their education debt because they have less parental wealth to draw on, as well as higher rates of unemployment. So in addition, the average defaulter resides in an area where the median income is around $50,000 compared with around $60,000 for non-defaulters. You wouldn't think that $10,000 would make that much of a difference.
Yeah, how about it? I mean, ironically, those with the smallest loan balances are the most likely to be unable to pay off their debt. Almost one in three people who owe less than $5,000 for their education default within 4 years. That's compared with just 15% of borrowers who owed more than $35,000. That's according to the Urban Institute study. So by the time a person's student loans fall into default, they'll see their credit score tank around 60 points to an average of around 550, which is considered very poor by rating company Experian. You know, borrowers who want to stay current, on the other hand, have scores on average in the high 600s. You know, it's that's interesting. The government also has pretty widespread collection powers with federal loans, since they're one of the only debts unable to be discharged in bankruptcy. I'm trying to see what else, if there's anything else there. She says that at best, you know, the student loan default can delay participation in the American dream. At worst, these people who default are shut out permanently.
Well, let's go ahead and let's talk a little bit about Iran and about how we know the United States is planning to impose crude sanctions against Iran, and how that could significantly impact the global supply and exhaust the world's spare oil capacity. This was reported by the IEA, the International Energy Agency. The IEA has closely watched reports shortly after the reintroduction of the U.S. sanctions against Iran, which from November will also include oil exports. As oil sanctions against Iran take effect, perhaps in combination with production problems elsewhere, maintaining global supply might be very challenging and would come at the expense of maintaining an adequate spare capacity cushion, this organization said on earlier or late last week. So we know on Tuesday the administration reinstated the sanctions targeting the Iranian government purchase of U.S. dollars, Tehran's trade in gold and other precious metals, and its automotive industry. And of course, the U.S. President, President Trump, also warned that unless Iran, which is a member of OPEC, complies with U.S. demands, Washington will look to impose far tougher measures early November. So there will be a second wave of sanctions. And the second batch will potentially be more damaging to Iran. And it'll target Iran's port operators as well as energy, shipping, and shipbuilding industries. So we have petroleum-related transactions and dealings between foreign financial organizations and the Central Bank of Iran will be impacted. So I guess these sanctions are all to get Iran to sit down at the table to make a deal?
Yeah, this article certainly suggests that, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... You know, are these other countries, our allies, some of them, the EU, for example, or China and India, you know, they've spoken out against the sanctions. Are they going to bow to U.S. pressure and comply? Or are they going to go out on their own and, renegotiate if they have to, to do their own thing? We know the last time Iran was sanctioned, about half its current oil imports of 2.4 million barrels at that time were removed from the market. You know, except this time around, many energy analysts believe sanctions are going to remove far less, maybe around half of that prior amount, or about 1.2 million barrels per day. But, you know, some onlookers have recently raised their expectations amid signs that some companies are complying with tough talk from the White House. And any reduction in Iranian crude, particularly crude exports, are going to depend on whether major buyers of its oil in Asia receive sanction waivers. That's a big question. Meanwhile, it's also not clear whether China, who we know is the biggest buyer of Iranian crude, is going to resist our call on November when these sanctions kick in.
Well, you know, we talked about earlier in the program about a strong dollar and how it impacts, and also a strong dollar is also could be a big concern to oil traders. We have the prospect of continued strength of the dollar, and over the coming months should constitute an even greater concern to bullish oil traders than an escalating trade war. Investors are currently seen weighing bullish factors that include potential supply disruptions to the Iranian crude exports against more bearish indicators, and of course such as a broad greenback strength and a ramp up in production by OPEC. So there are a lot of variables in the oil market, the most important of which is Iran. If 1 million barrels per day or more of Iranian exports go AWOL, the current fragile supply-demand balance will be upended, potentially sending oil prices above the May peak. And the most obvious thing that could change this view is not the U.S.-China trade war, but the strong dollar. That, if it lasts, will put an almost unbearable burden on consuming countries.
Wow. I mean, we know that, you know, the international benchmark Brent crude traded around $73 on Friday, a little changed from that previous session. U.S. West Texas Intermediate stood at a little over 67. That was down about 0.3%. Meanwhile, the U.S. dollar climbed to a 13-month high against a basket of six major currencies amid renewed financial turmoil in Turkey, as we talked about earlier. The dollar edged about 0.1% higher during early afternoon deals, trading over the 96 mark against major peers. Now, typically, crude futures trade inversely to the dollar. A stronger dollar makes oil more expensive to much of the world, so oil prices tend to fall as the dollar rises.
We're going to go ahead and we're going to go to a little bit about North Korea. We haven't talked much about them lately. Kim Jong-un's pause in testing appears to have prevented North Korea from perfecting its intercontinental ballistic missiles. This is from the vice chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff. He says, our assessment is that North Korea hasn't been able to complete the last two pieces of technology needed to make its ICBMs reliable, and we've not seen a demonstration of a reliable reentry vehicle, and we have not seen a demonstration of a reliable arming, firing, and fusing system that would allow the system to actually detonate when he wants it to. That's been a benefit to the administration initiative to pursue talks aims at getting him, President Kim, to give up his nuclear arsenal. Still, the general added of the pause that we don't know what impact it has on his logic, on his decision calculus.
Yeah, at the end of last year, we remember North Korea proclaimed that its nuclear program was complete. And Kim said in a New Year's speech that he could now strike anywhere in the U.S. Our president and Kim met in Singapore in June and came away with a bare-bones pledge to pursue denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, that among other goals. Now, while North Korea hasn't resumed missile tests, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said that the regime continues to produce fissile material. And the Washington Post has reported signs of continued work on its ICBM program, but didn't elaborate on those details. We know, again, that the Joint Chiefs Chair says, if North Korea fired an ICBM at the U.S. now, we might actually make the choice not to try to shoot it down, because based on what we know about the system and its trajectory, it's not going to hit anything, except presumably water. Melody.
Well, another story that's kind of goes, unattended, and I don't think anybody really knows if it's going to go through or not, but might go against the voters' wishes, and that's Brexit. There's a lot of people that says it's no big deal, and they ought to just get it done and over with. I'm really not sure at this point in time, because they've dragged it out for so long with the way it has to be processed and so forth, what it will really mean to the UK and to the European Union if it continues to go through. But both sides think it's a joke. both sides have agreed it's a joke. And Bloomberg has been following through the Brexit process and describes, and this is how companies describe the Brexit, they look at it as a joke. And that includes a company whose chief favors leaving the European Union. This was just months before the deadline for the UK and the EU had to finalize their separation agreement. Prime Minister May has been preparing for the prospect of departing without one. So divided is her Conservative Party. But four of her ministers resigned last month amid a rebellion over her approach to Brexit, and after appointing a new Brexit secretary, May took personal control of the negotiations with the EU. So there's a lot of difficulties she's having in making this Brexit happen. And tell us about John Elliott. Wasn't he a supporter of Brexit?
Well, he was, and you know, there's obviously a break. There's you know, the remorse and regret on the one hand that some people who voted for Brexit are reportedly now feeling. Politicians and business leaders throughout the UK are on both sides, and it's being spoken of. Largely, it has been in terms of trade and, you know, its effect on individual countries, the EU as a whole, and particularly consumers who live in Europe. But Elliott, the other one, you know, the other big issue is immigration. And Elliott is one who favors more stringent immigration controls. You know, he says, for example, having a police border such as between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland is necessary, you know, particularly if they, you know, moving ahead with leaving. It's a lot of uncertainty.
I think it's a story that we should continue to talk about. It's interesting to see how it kind of correlates with the rest of the world. So 800-375-4188. We'll be back Wednesday. Tomorrow I'll be here with Butch Paul. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.